Okay, so I will be talking about second order QCD corrections to the case of heavy quarks. The work was done actually very recently in collaboration with Jan Blok, Randamir Czarnecki, and with Fyodor Tkachev. So this is the outline of my talk. First of all, I'm going to show you our motivation for this calculation and also to point out some applications in real physical cases when the general pattern of heavy to light transition occurs. Then I'll be talking about our methods which made this calculation possible in the last few years, so about optical theorem, asymptotic expansion, recurrence relations, and so on. Then I will present our results and finally briefly conclude. So let's start with the generic situation of heavy to light transition. We have a heavy particle, in fact not necessarily a quark in the initial state, and it decays weakly into a light particle in the final state into a W boson. And we studied that situation where the particle in the initial state is much heavier than the one in the final state, which means that at least in the leading approximation, we can neglect the mass of the particle in the final state. Also, we studied second order contributions, so we have to take into account real radiation with two gluons in quark case in the final state. Also, two-loop virtual corrections and mixed real virtual case, as usual. Now, the question is why we study the case of this kind at all, and there is a number of reasons. The first and probably the most important one is that there aren't enough physical applications to this general scenario. And these are, for example, second-order QCD contributions to top decay. Also second order correction to B2U semi-leptonic decay and second order QED correction to muon decay. Now it turns out that the real challenge in this calculation, in fact the real problem, is the fact that they involve charged massive particle in the initial state. So radiation from this particle arises. And as you know very well, there are corrections up to a very high order. For neutral particles like photon, for example, whereas there is relatively few such results for charged and massive particles at next to leading order. Also, it was mentioned several times during this workshop that this sort of computations became feasible very recently because new computing methods appear, and also the performance of hardware is growing pretty fast. So even relatively naive brute force approach can be used to produce result in a reasonable amount of time. Finally, there is many more applications of this kind I showed you above, which follow basically the same patterns, so the same computing techniques can be used there. And for example, right now we are working on a second order contribution to B2U non-leptonic decay, which is a natural continuation of the semi-leptonic process. Also, hard QCD contributions to beam mixing can be attacked with the same technique and probably many more processes. So from this point of view, we can even treat this project as a good testing ground for the new method and for our code. Okay. Now just a very short look on the applications, just to show you what we are calculating and what for. So the principal motivation for the whole story was the top quark decay rate in two loops QCD. So as you know very well, top is the heaviest fermion in the standard model. It has, thanks to this very very short lifetime. So for top physics, we can almost neglect the non-perturbative QCD corrections and fully trust perturbative calculation, which is an extremely nice feature. Also, T going to B and W is the absolutely dominant decay channel for top. So it seems that top physics is a very good place to look for new physics. But as usual, two pieces of information are needed. Firstly, we need, of course, accurate experimental determination of top decay rate, which will be possible in the future, for example, at the next linear collider. But also we need much accuracy theoretical determination of this quantity. So now a very short summary was the theoretical status of top decay rate. Tree level is, of course, known exactly, it's roughly 1.5 GeV. Then one loop QCD contribution was computed for 15 years ago, and it decreases the tree level by roughly 9%. Then one loop electrolytic correction is also known, but it's much smaller. It's less than 2% of gamma zero. So up to now, the theoretical uncertainty in determination of top decay rate was almost entirely due to unknown next to leading order QCD contribution. And there are numerical estimations of this effect, which gave roughly minus 2% of gamma zero. But of course, for new physics searches, accurate value would be useful. Okay, next example is B2U semi-leptonic decay. Here, situation is more subtle since for B physics, of course, non-perturbative effects are relevant. And what we are calculating is only hard QCD part. Moreover, for this process, the total width is known exactly. So with our results, with our project, we can provide an independent cross-check of this result by Van Rietbergen and Stewart. Also, the differential decay rate as a function of leptons invariant mass is known in the so-called zero recoil limit. So when the invariant mass of leptons is equal to the mass of decaying big quark. And we construct the expansion in the second limit when the leptons invariant mass is equal to zero. And by matching procedure, we obtain the differential decay rate value in the full range of Q squared. So that's the second application. And the third example is the two-loop QED correction to muon decay. Now there is one technical difficulty comparing to the quark cases. Namely, for quark decays, we had exchanges of gluons between quarks, between fermions on the same fermion line. So between this guy and this guy, roughly. And now we have charged particles on different fermion lines, but this can be, by the way, this means contact fermi interaction. This W line is contracted to a point. This can be fixed by Phillips rearrangement, so we end up with charge retention order interaction term. And now the situation is identical to abelian part of the contribution to quark decays. And again, the total decay rate is known, so we can provide an independent cross-check of Van Rietbergen's exact formula. Okay, this is the summary of various limits which occur in this problem. On the horizontal axis, there is mass of the quark in the final state, or MB over the MT squared for top decay. On the vertical axis, there is leptons invariant mass, or MW over MT squared for top decay. Now, this whole triangle is the region which is accessible to due to kinematical constraints in the decay, and this side of the triangle is the zero recoil limit when the sum of the mass of the quark in the final state and leptons invariant mass is equal to the mass of decaying quark. So we don't have real radiation in the zero recoil limit because there is no phase space available. And the decay rate is known exactly on this zero recoil line and also in various expansions around this line, in these three points. Now, what we are interested in this project is the limit of massless quark in the final state. So, in fact, we are interested in this vertical axis. Now, in this limit, we have zero recoil kinematic expansion from above. And the only missing part is the expansion around the origin, so this one marked by the zero. So this is what we are aiming at in this calculation. And having this, we have achieved two goals. Firstly, we can perform the matching procedure to produce the differential decay rate valid in the whole range of leptons invariant mass. But also, we can approach the physical ratio of MW over MT squared as closely as possible here to give more accurate prediction for top decay rate in two loops. Okay, so let's proceed to our methods. These are examples of diagrams that should be computed in the next leading order. We use the optical theorem in the standard way, so we relate the contributions to the decay rate to imaginary parts of self energy diagrams, which was discussed several times here. And we have 19 topologies of such self energy diagrams in the abelian sector, 11 in the non-abelian sector, and 6 with vacuum polarization loops for light and heavy fermions. Now, as you can see, even when we are calculating only next to leading order, the contributions are in fact 3 loop. So this is our task to do. Then after identifying all contributions, the next step is the asymptotic expansion. So it's evident that in case of top decay, there are 2 scales in the problem, which are masses of top quark and of the W boson. And the standard way to proceed is to assign these 2 scales to all loop momenta that arise, in this case to 3 loop momenta, in all possible ways, then to identify small parameters which arise as a result of such assignment, and to expand in these small parameters. So we have 2 scales, 3 loop momenta. There is an easy exercise that the momenta flowing through the gluon lines, K1 and K2, should be of the order of an MT, should be halved in this problem, because otherwise the corresponding contribution is 0. So we end up with 2 regions in the problem. The first one is when the momentum flowing through W line, K3, is of the order of MT, is halved. And in this case, we can expand the W propagator in powers of W over MT squared. So we obtain diagrams which have the same topology as the original one, but with a massless line instead of the W propagator. But this is still three loops diagram. The next region is the soft one, when K3, the momentum flowing to W lines of the order of MW. And in this case, we expand in the diagram everywhere, treating K3 as a small parameter except for the W line itself. So the W line factorizes completely in this case. We obtain the product of two loop diagram times one loop massive vacuum bubble from this W propagator. This is, of course, orders of magnitude simpler than the original first region with K3 hard, because we have only two loop times one loop diagram. And also, this contribution doesn't arise in the leading order of NW over MT squared expansion. So at the origin of this triangle I showed you, because in this limit, NW is equal to 0, so the vacuum bubble is massless and disappears in the dimensional regularization. And the last important point to mention is that we have completely separated scales in the problem, so after asymptotic expansion, all loop diagrams are single scale. Okay. And the next step is absolutely standard. We use the computer algebra systems to automatically perform contractions of Lorentz indices, also to do traces of gamma matrices, and so on. So each diagram in the original problem can be re-expressed as a linear combination of scalar integrals. And in the whole problem, we identified 9 basic topologies of such scalar integrals. Next step is also now, this is reduction of scalar integrals to master integrals using integration by parts identities, recurrence relations, and so on. And as usual, the problem is how to solve such a system of recurrence relations. So let me just focus on this issue for a while. The first traditional method, which is called by inspection here, is just to look into the system of recurrence relations, manually arrange them so to simplify the original topology to simpler master topologies, which is, of course, very time-consuming method, but anyway, we implemented reduction procedures for each 9 topologies in form. The newer approach, which is the fully process-independent and automated algorithm by Laporta, is based on Gaussian elimination of a large system of recurrence relations with a given ordering function. And we have an implementation of the Laporta algorithm in our dedicated computer algebra system, which is called PolarBear. I will comment on it in a moment. Now, because we have 2 independent implementations, as far as I know, this is the first time when when a real calculation is done with both methods simultaneously. So this graph gives us an opportunity to compare them and possibly gain something from this comparison for optimizations of the code or refinements of algorithm. So this is a simple comparison of both approaches. What is not very surprising, the traditional method is much better, much faster for simpler topologies. It takes just a few minutes to reduce the simpler topology and calculate six expansion terms using these form reduction procedures. Unfortunately, it has very, very significant drawbacks. Firstly, for very high expansion terms and for difficult topologies, it sometimes crashes because of limitations in form memory management. What's even worse, it's very prone to human mistakes. In fact, we found several bugs in the implementation comparing results produced by PolarBear with this obtained with the traditional method. On the contrary, PolarBear has a typical example of, so to say, brute force approach. Requires, of course, significant computer power. But it turns out that it's not so bad because for the most difficult topology and for six terms in the expansion as above, we need order of 12 hours to perform the reduction and a few hours extra to produce each next term in the expansion. Also, this is improving all the time because we are working on optimizations of the code. The important feature of this approach is also that topologies of simpler of scalar integrals are independent. So we can compute everything in parallel, running Laporta's procedures independently for each topology, which means that in this 12 or maybe now 10 hours we can have the whole thing ready. And as I said before, it's very reliable because it's process independent. It's not just procedure, separate procedure for each topology. Okay. Now this feature of independence of topologies can be exploited in our plan for the nearest future, which is the completely automatic tool for computation of such problems. And the idea is very simple. We can automatically generate diagrams for a given problem with existing diagram generators. We also have our own very efficient generator. Then the next step is to identify distinct topologies in the problem for scalar integrals. And finally, to distribute these topologies on the nodes of the parallel computer cluster we have at the University of Alberta. And finally, for each node, for each topology, the Laporta procedure can be run independently and give results as a combination of master integrals. Now, the last technical comment I would like to make is about the tool we used for implementation of the whole computer algebra system. This is a very powerful, but unfortunately not very well known programming environment, which is called Blackbox. And we decided to switch to a completely new tool after notorious problems with general purpose tools like Maple, Mathematica, Form, whatever. And there are numerous advantages of this step. Namely, now we have things fully under control, so we avoid problems, for example, of memory management in Maple of whatever you can think of. Also, the task itself is, in fact, very simple because it's just automatic generation of equations and symbolic solution of a linear system. So we don't need any fancy features of, for example, Maple. The thing should be as simple as possible, but also as fast as possible. And Blackbox is a compiler, so the gain in speed comparing to interpreters is just enormous. Okay, so this is a simple example how the whole machinery works. This is for next to leading order QCD correction. At this order, we have three contributions shown here. Okay, and after the whole process of expressing them as a linear combination of scalar integrals and reduction to master integrals, we can have express everything as a linear combination of these two almost trivial master integrals, M1 and M2. This dashed line is a massless. This is massive. So for example, the third contribution is the following linear combination of M1 and M2 with proper normalization of dimensional constants in the leading order. So now the well-known result for next to leading order contribution can be automatically rederived in just a couple of seconds. Okay, so this leads us to our results. Firstly, in the hard region, which is the principal problem in the calculation, we expressed everything as a linear combination of 24 master integrals. Some of them are pretty simple, like these two guys here and here. Some are unfortunately not so simple, so this still might be a demanding task to compute them analytically, but eventually we obtained analytical formulas for the whole set of 24 primitive integrals. Then the top decay rate can be written in the following form. X0 and X1 are the three-level and one-loop corrections which are known exactly, and X2 is our goal in this calculation. Now, X2 can be subdivided into four color parts, which are the abelian, non-abelian, and for light and heavy flavors in the polarization loops. And the comparison of the exact result, in fact, of the leading order of the exact result we obtained in with our procedure, and the previous numerical estimation by Kirill and Andrzej Czarnecki is shown here, as you know. As you can see, the agreement is pretty nice. But as I said, this is only the leading order, so there are also higher terms in the expansion omega, which is nw over mt squared, and we produce terms up to omega to the fifth. It's not very difficult to produce higher expansion terms, but as I will show you in 30 seconds, it's probably not needed. So now, taking the physical ratio of nw over mt squared, we can give new prediction for the top decay rate at next to leading order QCD. So the value is shown above. There is one important comment. The estimation of the error is almost entirely due to inaccurate determination, experimental determination of MT. And the theoretical uncertainty, which is connected with taking only a finite number of terms in the expansion in omega, also neglecting B mass and so on, is almost 20 times smaller. So that's the reason why more terms in the expansion, it's probably not needed. And finally, the next to leading order QCD contribution to top decay is roughly minus 2% of Born decay rate, which agrees with previous expectations. Okay, now this is an illustration of the matching procedure I mentioned at the very beginning. The thin line is the expansion around the zero decay limit, which was known before. Our present expansion around omega equal to zero is the thick line. So as you can see, there is a wide overlap region of these two expansions where they can be matched smoothly. And the resulting differential decay rate value in the full range of omega is the solid line. Now the final result for the differential decay rate for B2U semi-leptonic decay is depicted here, also with solid line. And using this, we can provide an independent check of the total width for B2U semi-leptonic decay and for muon decay, just integrating the differential decay rate within the kinematical boundaries, so from the present limit to the zero decay limit. The results are shown here. For muon decay, we of course take only the abelian part. And these are the numerical values taken from the exact result by van Rietbergen. So again, the agreement is pretty good. They can be still improved by taking probably more terms in the expansion in omega. Okay, so let me just conclude. I was trying to give you another example that modern computing methods made possible some calculations which were unreachable before. And using these methods and also our implementation of the new algorithm, we computed new, more accurate prediction for top decay rate. Also, using matching procedure, we obtained the differential decay rate for B2U semi-leptonic decay valid in the full range of invariant mass of leptons. And we provide an independent cross-check for B and mu total width. And the last comment may be that there is, of course, still much space for future optimizations of our programs. So the prospects for the physical, important physical problems that still lie ahead look quite optimistic. That's it.
Questions, observations? I'd like to mention that there was already a verification of the Van Rijnsburg's poor calculation by Steinhauser and Salenspeaker.
Yes, but
so now there is a third, which is very nice.
Yes, that's right. I have also made one comment about this. They also have implemented, have obtained the result for total decay rate.
Yeah.
The problem is that they used PADA approximation. This was numerical result, and the result is by at worst phi sigma of our exact result. So probably it's very difficult to obtain reliable estimation of an error in the numerical calculation. Yes, there is a difference.
I see. The other question is, you have such a differential decay rate for mu decay.
Yeah.
And I think previously they were really low for calculations. Does it differ very much?
Comparing to ridiculous, I think so.
What? For the spectrum. So, yeah, for the spectrum, the differential spectrum for muon decay, the relative corrections can be very large, you know, for the spectrum. And they were leading logarithmic calculations at the two-loop order.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering how your complete calculation compares with that.
I must admit that
you have not. It would be interesting because there can be very large corrections.
Mm-hmm. I will check.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I want to thank all the speakers of the